Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Kind of a random Tuesday. Can we call is today a random Tuesday? What makes a day a random day? May 20th, Tuesday. What makes a random day? Is today a random Tuesday? I think it has to be, right, Josh?
I mean, yeah, with all the weird stuff, all the weird random news we've gotten today, conversations and everything like that, I think it's random enough.
No, I know, but that makes it that's the point. It's a random Tuesday. For a random Tuesday, we got a bunch of news. Like, it starts off as a random day that you don't expect anything. It's just a random day. And then, wait a minute, we got all this stuff we can talk about. This is my first time in the studio in like a week because they were doing some work in here. It is way brighter in here in your studio.
Yeah, we got brand new lights and they look great.
It is way brighter in here.
It's super helpful
and
in the morning.
It's not flickering. Right? Like, usually you got this one light up there. It's like, flickers every once in a while, right?
It's super helpful when I get here at like 5 in the morning and I'm like kind of tired and it's dark outside. It just kind of like, all right, we're awake now, you know?
Yeah. I looked into the studio and into your studio. There's a piece of glass, a big glass between Josh and I. Josh Schmidt's producing the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And you probably see that when you watch the morning show sometimes or the afternoon show on YouTube. And like, I looked over and you're super bright in there now. And then I realized that's on my side too. Super bright. So yeah, they did a good job of fixing these lights. It's good for me too as I get older. I've always had very good eyesight. But I will tell you, it is true. Like, as you get older, it just starts to kind of go a little bit, right? I see that in the morning. Every once in a while, I'll get up in the morning now. And, you know, first thing you do, what do you do when you get up in the morning? You look at your phone, you look at Twitter, you open up the news and see what's going on. What'd you miss overnight? Scores. And I do actually have a hard time looking at some of the, like, I'm reading the text. But I also sleep with a fan right on me. And my wife says it's drying your eyes out. That's why. So you get up and it dries your eyes out.
But your eyes are shut.
Yeah, but I think that it just kind of does. It blows right on you, right? So I think that might be it. But anyway, so I like this look. It's nice and bright, and it gives us a chance to kind of perk up and talk about all of the news and things happening on a random Tuesday in May. Welcome to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. So, a lot to get to today. Flag football, the tush push, playoff seeding, NBA and NHL conference finals, Mitch Marner. Everything is kind of on the table right now. If you'd like to, all of that. I mean, let's just talk about it at 803-0550. We also have Paul Hamilton coming up at 10:30 to talk on a little bit of this. And at 11 o'clock, Brayton Wilson's going to hop in studio because he's here on the WBEN side working. And he's going to talk a little bit. I'm going to ask him about the stadium tour he did last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago, from a lot of people from the different news organizations. And prospects for the NHL draft, because that could also impact, you know, the Sabres offseason, obviously, what their plan is. It will impact it in some way. Will Mitch Marner impact the Sabres offseason? Where should we start? I was told flag football was getting a lot of traction. All right, let's start there. So the flag football proposal, and you are welcome to call about this. And I guess on the morning show, there were quite a few people who called in and had some opinions on flag football. Here is exactly what Adam Schefter tweeted this morning. He said, ESPN sources say, a vote to allow NFL players to participate in flag football for the first time during the 2028 Summer Olympics in LA is expected to pass in today's league meetings in Minneapolis. Nothing is official yet, but one source said about today's vote, Olympics should be easy. Okay. This has been happening in other sports for a long time. I'm pretty sure most of you understand the evolution of the Olympics, but I think for a lot of younger listeners and people who don't maybe know what it was like before pros started playing in all these different sports, the Olympics were sacred for amateurs for many years. That is why the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team, why it is so revered in so many ways, because of what they were able to do as a bunch of amateur hockey players, non-professional paid athletes, college hockey players, essentially, beating a bunch of professionals in Russia. And I mean, I think the rules might have been ambiguous. Other countries always had kind of their pros, right? That's what they did. They might not have called them pros, but they were pros. But the United States never sent pros to the Olympics. They sent amateurs, people who didn't get paid. It was really about, it was an amateur event. And the other countries were sending professionals and they're playing these sports. And it started happening in basketball a lot. So obviously the United States beats Russia in their game in hockey. And, you know, there's a big fallout from that, of course. And it's during the Cold War and it's a big deal. And that's why it was so special. All those things, the theater that surrounded it was amazing. So then you get to later in the 80s, and now European countries are sending professional basketball players to the Olympics. The United States are sending college players to the Olympics. And it was kind of, basketball's always been kind of our game, right? Oh, yeah, we'll just beat anybody in basketball. And then that started not happening. And there were a couple famous times in the, late 80s, where the U.S. Olympic men's basketball team just did not have enough talent. They were using amateurs and college players, and they were losing. So basically, the United States Olympic Committee said, yeah, screw this. Let's send our professional American basketball players to the Olympics, and we'll show the world how great we can be if we did that. And that's how you got the Dream Team. That was the genesis of the Dream Team, essentially, was, okay, we're tired of other countries sending their pros, so we're now going to send our pros to show them what it's really like. Bam. And of course, they just cleaned everybody up. And that was great to see, but it also took away from what the Olympics were truly about here in America, which was amateurism. And let's be honest, since then, last 30 years, the lines between amateurism and professionalism have been blended throughout. I mean, I'm talking, like, of course, college, NIL. Everybody's getting paid now, right? These college athletes aren't amateurs anymore. They're pros. They're getting paid. That's what the definition of being a pro is. A professional. You get paid for your job, your duty. Professional radio announcer, right? Professional plumber. Professional construction worker. Whatever it is, you're not on the job training and not getting paid. College athletes are now, even if they want to call it something else, that's what they're doing. So it's kind of taken away from that aspect, which really sucks for a lot of people. But what we've seen is, the flip side, the best athletes in the world competing at the Olympics. And that's why hockey has become awesome to watch in a lot of ways. And even in basketball, right? The Americans now go, and basketball is such a worldwide game that professionals from all these other countries start playing. And they're so good in other countries, whether it's Lithuania or Spain or whatever, and you have great contests now because, you know, the game has grown so much over the years. So now you're getting pros from all these other countries that are on par with the American teams, the American talent, in a lot of ways. Hockey too, right? It's been really kind of, yeah, Canada and Russia and Finland, Sweden, and the Americans. Like, everybody's right there. That's why you do the four nations, because these are the best countries. And I know there were different reasons why you only chose those countries, but that's what's happened. Now we're in this. Now what we've seen is, on top of that, football's never been a true, like, Olympic sport, to tackle football. But they play it around the world. And we all know, like, you can't just make, I mean, if you wanted to make football, I don't think it's ever been, if you want to make football a tackle Olympic sport, like, you know, American, the pool of talent from America would be just like it was back for the Dream Team, and even more so. It just wouldn't be right, wouldn't be fair. But flag football, what's happened is, in conjunction with, let's think about this now, in conjunction with how everything's gone from amateurs to professionals and Olympics, at that same time period, over the last 20 years or so, football has really kind of evolved into a game of really less big hits, less physicality, on purpose, because of all these lawsuits and research and people understanding more about head injuries and trauma. And that's brought out the game of flag football at a younger level, at an older level, I should say. First, at an older and younger, I should say, of both of them. But flag football has become a really big sport around the country. And it's growing all the time. And it's boys and girls and men and women. And it's becoming so big, at the same time the professionals are playing the Olympics. That's how we got to today. That's how we got here. You have the, in conjunction with pros going to the Olympics, with this unbelievable explosion of flag football around the country, and especially in the United States, but everywhere. They're playing flag football everywhere now. And that's how we got here. And I think there's a, I don't even know if I want to see a romanticism. There is a theater. There is a, yeah, let's watch this. Thinking about professional NFL football players playing flag football for their country and at the highest of levels against each other. And I don't know, like, what the other what kind of players all these countries will have. I would imagine the American team will be really stacked. But there's going to be a lot of people just want to tune in and watch this and say, let me see these guys play. And we've seen it at the Pro Bowl now. That's why they changed the Pro Bowl. Everything I just said, it's gone from, the Pro Bowl used to go from an actual football game they used to play. They don't do that anymore. Thank God, because it was terrible. I mean, back in the 80s and 90s, it wasn't terrible, but it got terrible. Nobody wanted to hit anybody, and it was just for fun. So, all right, let's just stop playing the game. We'll play flag football now. And that's what they've done. You've also had times where, at the Pro Bowl, everybody might know the story or remember Robert Edwards, who was a running back. They played, what, flag football on the beach, was it? Was he playing flag football when he tore his ACL? I think it was that, right? Do you remember? Robert Edwards, it wasn't beach volleyball. It was flag football, I think, they were playing on the beach. And he wound up tearing his ACL. So I think that's the fear, right, from a lot of people. So I'm interested in your thoughts about this. That's the history of it. That's how we got here. Where are we going with it, and why are we going there? Well, the reason we're going there, yes, I think there's a piece of, of course, where is, would it be NBC maybe has the Olympics? Yeah, they're going to want to put this on TV and showcase, you know, Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen or Joe Burrow and Justin Jefferson and all these incredible athletes. They're going to want to do that, right? No doubt. But it's really, I think, because where football is they're trying to really continue to grow the sport of flag football. The numbers for football, like tackle football, they were declining for a long time, and I think they've kind of ebbed a little bit. They've kind of leveled off, and even people are starting to play again a little bit more, but that's because of the introduction of flag football at the lower levels and then playing at a younger age and getting up higher as you get to the tackle levels. I mean, I started playing tackle football in third grade. I was on the 65-pound team. That's right, the 65-pound team for the Cheektowaga. It was called the Little Thunder. Actually, L-I-apostrophe-L, Little Thunder. And then you had the 80-pound Thunderbolts and the 800-pound Thunderbirds and the 135-pound Thunder Chiefs, I think it was. But, you know, I don't know how many places do that anymore at that age. Used to weigh in and could not weigh more than 65 pounds. I was so small, I could weigh in with all my equipment and still literally was able to play. It was okay. But that was my first exposure. Like, we didn't have flag football. was tackle football. You want to play football, you play tackle football. Third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade. And I'm sure there is some of that going around now. And people are like, yeah, my kid does. But there's a lot less of it. People are playing flag football. The game is growing. And great. It's awesome. My son plays flag football. And there's these tournaments everywhere. I play flag football, but for younger people, for boys, for girls, for men, for women, it's great. And that's how we got to where we are now. But do you want to see, these NFL stars, these NFL players playing flag football? That's where we'll start today. I have some thoughts on this reseeding of the playoffs, too, that I want to get to, and the tush push, okay? Let's start it off, though, here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Jim in South Buffalo. Hi, Jim. What do you think?
Okay, the flag football in the Olympics, and it wouldn't be fair. It wouldn't be fair right now. We should start off with sending our college players. I really think that a team of five-star recruits, high school players, could beat the world.
Okay, so you think you're for flag football in the Olympics, just not sending the NFL players there for that reason.
I would like to see more competition from the United States. You know, go a little lesser. You know, the rest of the world's not up to par with us. I don't want to see another 1992. I'm sorry for my voice.
That's okay.
I have multiple sclerosis. So
no, it's all good. You're good, Jim. Take your time. Hey, you don't want to see a 1992 Dream Team again?
Exactly. I don't want to see us just go in there and just beat the crap out of people at our own.
Let me ask you this, Jim. How, like, if you don't mind, how old are you? Like, what? How old are you right now?
I'm 43.
Okay, all right. You're a little younger than me, but you remember the 92 team. Do you remember in 92 what you thought about it? Because I tend to agree with you. Like, okay, what are we doing? But in 92, we're like, let's show the world how great we are. And it was great to watch those guys play, right? It was, like, unbelievable to watch them play together. It proved a point, and it was fun to watch the point being proven at the time. And then you're like, okay, we don't need this anymore. That's the way I looked at it.
That's exactly it, yeah.
I got you.
It was cool to see that at first when, but I was a little kid. I thought it was awesome, you know. I was like, yeah, I tried to take on Michael Jordan. But I think that, like, some really good high school kids would make some good competition, and it would be fun to watch and to root for.
I don't know what the other countries have. Thanks, Jim. I appreciate your thoughts on that. Let's go to Sam in Buffalo. Hi, Sam. You're on WGR.
Hi. I think I have a little bit different of a perspective on this. Coming from, like, a lacrosse background where there just started to be international play, and now, like, Canada, U.S. have always been, like, the top teams. In order to grow a sport, especially, like, flag football, you really have to showcase to the rest of the world the types of players that are going to be playing. And I think that if we let, like, Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen go to play flag football, it's going to not only let the world know how amazing of a sport it is, like it did with lacrosse, especially in Israel when there was 56 teams that were there, but it's also going to invigorate a bunch of money being poured into the sport to grow it and to have there be better competition in the future.
Yeah, I like that, Sam. I think that's what the NFL is thinking, right, which is, we're trying to grow this game. And look, around Western New York even, flag football is becoming a high school sport and even a college sport. You have college teams. And if this becomes something that younger people can look at and say, I want to do that, I want to be a part of that, I think that's a part of the intention here for what the NFL is doing, what they want. So Nick Shook, I really like Nick. He's a fun writer at NFL.com, does a really good job. Nick Shook wrote just a few days ago, earlier this week, last week, he put down a 12-person roster of a flag football team. What he would give, okay? Six on offense, six on defense. There's one sub on each side, okay? Do you think he put a Bills player on this roster? One American football team, flag football team roster.
I'm going to say no. I think he should put Josh Allen on there, but I feel like he put maybe Lamar Jackson on there instead.
He did.
I just think, like, in the context of flag football, it might. I could see the argument either way, but I would put Allen, but I do see the point of putting Jackson.
Even though he did write, Jackson is unquestionably the top choice for the job. Although Jaden Daniels might make a nice second option, he wrote.
I could see that, too.
There's a lot of guys you can make a second
option. Right. I mean, especially with the way they play quarterback now.
Sure, like, Jalen Hurts would be a good option. No?
I don't think so.
No?
He's not in the same category.
No, not like running like that, but I mean, like, just he's, yeah. Not as much as those guys.
Yeah, and that's where you kind of get into the whole tush-push conversation and all that, too. But, like, I look at, like, Daniels, Jackson, and Allen in terms of, like, a flag football scenario. Those three, I think, are the best. And it's kind of a toss-up, whichever one you want, really. I mean, with Allen, at least you have the ability to throw, too. But Daniels also offers that a little bit. We've been seeing that as the season went on. So I think it's really just, like, any of those three could make it easily. I don't think there's one above the rest, though. I think they're all very equal in this.
For
in
running this back, he has Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, that's fine.
At wide receiver, he has two guys, and I don't have any issue. Justin Jefferson. He's got DK Metcalf over Jamar.
Interesting. Is it the size?
I don't know.
Well, you don't have to tackle him, though, so...
It's the speed.
Oh,
he gave it a shot. He posted a respectable time of 10.37 seconds against elite sprinters. Plus, freakish combination of physical gifts. There you go. Tight end, he has Brock Bowers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And his offensive substitute is another running back. Who do you think he chose?
Derrick Henry.
No.
Hmm.
You got to think guy who can catch the ball.
That's true.
Have some moves. Jahmyr Gibbs.
Oh.
Interesting, okay. Right?
I like that.
Defense. Kalijah Kancey of the Bucks. Fred Warner, who just got paid. Patrick Surtain and Sauce Gardner as his corners.
Whoa.
And you have to include Travis Hunter, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I don't care if I've never seen him play it down in the NFL. I'm including Travis Hunter.
But then
in
he can play both sides of the ball, and it's like, you know, that'd be really fun, actually. I didn't even think about him in this scenario. Because he's going to be, what, that'll be like year three in the NFL for him at that point? In 2028?
Yeah, and yeah, that's right. And then Tariq, well, and by the way, that's right. DK Metcalf, how old is he going to be by then, right? I mean, you ready for that?
I mean,
right?
If you're making the roster for right now, it makes sense. But
Right now, yeah, that's right. Tariq Woolen would be his defensive substitute. Size, the length, speed. Interesting. That's Nick Shook. He wrote that. All right, we'll take a timeout here in a minute. It is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I welcome your calls today at 803-0550. We are getting connected with our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. When we come back, I'm going to have Paul Hamilton. We're going to preview the NHL Conference Finals. Also, his thoughts on what happened with the Leafs, or didn't happen. Mitch Marner. And more with Paul Hamilton. Plus, I'll get to the tush push. Maybe we'll have news on exactly what's going to happen with that. The playoff reseeding. This is all on the table today, basically, at the owners' meetings this week. But I think votes are coming today on all of this. So I have some thoughts on all of that. We'll talk about it. Thanks for joining me today. It's a Tuesday, a random Tuesday, here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Hey, everyone. Summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
WGR.
Felt like we were ready to play. Felt like we were in a good mindset. Like I said, I thought the first 10 minutes, they came out strong, and
the next 10 minutes, I thought we controlled play. You know, and then I just thought we had too many passengers throughout the rest of the game and just weren't on the same page. And, you know, they get a couple goals and momentum like that, and then you're chasing the game, and it's hard to get it back, you know, when you're down 3 against a good team that plays sound defensively like them.
Austin Matthews with the too many passengers quote. That's going to resonate for quite a while, I think, in Toronto, to be quite honest with you. A city that has been starving for their Leafs to advance farther on than they have. 2 series wins in the last, 20 years, I think it is. That's it. Sabres have 4 in that same time. It's unbelievable when you think about it. They lose in Game 7 to the Florida Panthers, who are now on to face the Carolina Hurricanes, the Edmonton Oilers against the Dallas Stars in the West. If the Cup is to be in Canada and to reside there for the first time since 1993, the last hope is the Edmonton Oilers, because you have the Panthers and Carolina Hurricanes on the east side, like I said, and the Oilers and the Dallas Stars on the west side. Joining me right now on the Western Hotline to talk about everything that went down and what it looks like going forward is Paul Hamilton and his reports on WGR, brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Thinking about today and planning for tomorrow, and by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. Well, Paul, what do you think happened in Game 7 to the Toronto Maple Leafs? Was it simply losing to a team that was better than them, or did the pressure actually get to this team that did not show up very well that night?
Both, I think. As I recall, I think I heard the Leafs saying that last time this happened to them, or one of the times, because it's happened to them a lot. They just didn't show up, and, you know, it was a weird game, too, because I believe the first 20 shot attempts were for Florida.
Yeah.
And Toronto, absolutely, that's as bad a start as I've seen a team that is supposed to be good ever have. But then they had the next 7 shots. Their first opportunity was Nylander, and it was a golden opportunity. Bobrovsky had to make a great save. So then Toronto looked like, all right, we're finally getting into the game. You know, they held off Florida. They hadn't scored. And Toronto started, you know, getting into the game, and it looked like, okay, good, we're going to have a game. And then next thing you know, it's 3-0. And then the Leafs basically quit after that. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. I don't say that very often, but once it got to be 3-0, they quit. I mean, it was all Florida, and all Florida had to do was cruise after that.
Paul, years ago, we used to have, and we still do sometimes, but we used to have really interesting debates and talks on this radio station about the word culture. And I think you and I are come from the same kind of cloth here. We have the same views on that, which is it absolutely matters. It's the kind of room you build. But this kind of culture is different. And here's another piece of culture that matters. When I hear guys like Matthew Tkachuk and Brad Marchand, the opposing team, talk about the pressure that you have to play under playing in Toronto, that is also a culture. When I hear Craig Rivet talk about walking into Montreal and looking up in the rafters and looking around the facility and seeing the cups and the banners, that's a different kind of culture. That is absolutely something that had to have played into what was going on in Toronto.
And I, as you mentioned, I think culture is a big thing. And because a lot of when people are against it, what I hear is, well, everybody trying to build culture. Every coach uses, and they're right. And every coach can't build culture. And that's why I think it's so important. There wasn't a coach with the Buffalo Bills that even came close to building a culture out there. They all talked about it until Sean McDermott showed up. And then he built a really good culture for the Buffalo Bills and has been able to sustain it. You have to be a different type of a coach to be able to accomplish it. So that's where I think that lies, is all coaches talk about it, but only a few can actually do it, that it matters. McDermott's done it. None of the Sabre coaches have been able to do it. And the Florida Panthers are a good example of what you're talking about. The Carolina Hurricanes have a culture which I'm not real fond of, but they win. And, you know, to me, I just get bored out of my gourd watching them play. I hate watching them play. It's not even fun watching the hockey game when they're playing, but they're winning. So that's the name of the game. You know,
go ahead.
The New Jersey Devils, let me point them out, when Jacques Lemaire was there. I hated hockey then because he was winning Stanley Cups by basically hanging out in the neutral zone, trapping, and waiting for turnovers and scoring. Well, he wins cups. Now everybody wants to do that, and it was just so boring to watch.
You're right. All that is right. I'll rephrase the way I want to say this because I think the culture I'm talking about here is not the typical type of what you build from a team within. Playing in Toronto in itself, I think, is just a different culture, is what I mean. It doesn't matter who the coach is. It doesn't matter who the players are. It's the culture of hockey in Toronto. It's the culture of hockey in Montreal. When you go to that city, there is a different feel and type. It does not matter who is on your team. It does not matter who your coach is. It just feels different. And I get that when Tkachuk says it and Marchand says it about the opposing team, which is amazing.
Yeah, and Montreal is just – and I tell fans, you know, well, if we were going to go to a road game, where should we go? I don't even have to think about it. Montreal.
Yep.
Absolutely Montreal. It is a different breed. It's a different animal. It's even a different type of arena, the way it's built. You know, it's the old-style arena where the seats are just straight up and there are railings in each row so you don't fall down. And just it's like being in a sports cathedral type of a thing. And the way the fans are there and in Montreal, those fans, they get behind you, you're golden. And it just motivates you. But when you mess up, they are on you. And they are on you quickly. And that's what you have to do as a visiting team is dominate the Canadiens for 15 minutes or for 10 minutes in a period. And those fans will turn on them immediately. So it's really any fan, if you ever want to go see a Sabres game on the road, make the trip. It's only about 5.5 hours or so to drive there. And it's just a great experience.
So that happened to Mitch Marner. He was getting booed every time he touched the puck in the third period. You know, the fans turned on him. This is now to a point where I think most people in Toronto believe that, you know, they're going to have a parting of the ways for a lot of different reasons. It's a core that needs to be broken up, but it's also just the way it's gone for Mitch Marner. How do you see this playing out with Mitch Marner in Toronto?
Well, they should have messed with this core 2-3 years ago, but they keep sticking with it. So I guess it's not a guarantee they're going to break it up, but how long do you stick with it before you finally realize this just isn't working? Yes, you have great hockey players, but they're not working together as a team. To this day, I cannot explain to you how the Buffalo Sabres were still one of the worst teams in the National Hockey League with O'Reilly, Eichel, Reinhart, and Evander Kane. I cannot explain it, how you would have four like great players like that at forward, and you're still one of the worst teams in the NHL. And it's sometimes you can't explain how do the Maple Leafs have the talent that they have and just fail miserably in the playoffs every single time. And, you know, they got past Ottawa, but you know, Ottawa made a series out of it. Toronto won the first three. The next thing you know, Ottawa makes it 3-2. And now, you know, the Leafs are uptight and they got through it because they're so much better than Ottawa is. But, yeah, it's just, you know, Austin Matthews, one of the most talented goal scorers in the NHL until they need him. And when they need him, he's not there. When they need Mitch Marner, he's not there. And that's the problem. I mean, and you just shake your head. And I know that's why they keep going back to it. It's like, yeah, but these guys are great players. Yeah, they are until you need them. And then they're not. So is this the year they're finally going to break it up? I would think so. But if I'm being honest with you, I said that last year, and I think I said it the year before. You know?
Do you think the Buffalo Sabres will attempt to pursue Mitch Marner?
I would not. He would not be number one on my list. There are two Florida Panthers I would pursue way before Mitch Marner for some of the reasons I've already outlined. But Sam Bennett and Marchand, I mean, these are guys that are winners. These are guys that are not one-dimensional. You can put them on your top six. They will produce for you, especially in the clutch. These are clutch players. They've won Stanley Cups. They are there when you need them the most. Plus, you know, they have that experience. And what do the Buffalo Sabres need? They don't need goal scoring. They don't need to spend $12 million on an offensive player. They're already 10th in the league in scoring and very close to being 7th in the league. 10th is 3.23 goals per game, and 7th is 3.26 goals per game. So they're right there. They can score goals. Their problem is they're 29th in the NHL in defense, and they have goaltenders that can't make the big save at the big time. Mitch Marner's not making saves. He's not going to help you defensively. For a team that hasn't made the playoffs that can score goals, I'm just a bit mystified why people want to spend $12 million to get offensive players. I would rather get leaders and guys who produce in the clutch and guys you can put in the top six and are not going to hurt you in your own zone and are going to produce when you need them. Yeah, they're not going to get 100 points like Mitch Marner. They're not going to have 60, 70 assists like Mitch Marner. But I would rather have the guys who have won and are there when you need them the most. And to me, that's Sam Bennett and Marchand. Now, the question is, if we're talking about any of the three of them, would they consider coming to a team that hasn't won been in the playoffs for 14 years? The answer is probably no, but that doesn't mean you don't pursue them. That doesn't mean that however the Buffalo Sabres rank those players, that you don't go to them first and you try to convince them to come. If they say no, they say no. But to me, you don't say, well, it's just a waste of time because we're Buffalo. No, I mean, that's plan A for me. And if plan A doesn't work, then you head to plan B. But, what if they say yes? And that's the way you got to look at it.
I'll get your thoughts in a second on the two series here at the end, the final four. But quickly, the Bruins have re-signed Don Sweeney to a two-year contract extension. Mm-hmm. Maybe a bit of a surprise to a lot of people. And I would say this, disappointing to a lot of Bruins fans that I read.
Yeah, they haven't drafted real well in some cases. And, they have a long road ahead now with what it's finally – they've aged out finally. Mm-hmm. And it's a long road ahead for them. And, I'm a little surprised. But, I'm also more than a little surprised that the Sabres haven't changed general managers. So sometimes those things happen and they go forward. And you're right, fans in Boston are not going to be pleased with that development.
All right, Paul, let's talk about the two conference finals here set up. Let's start with the West, Edmonton against Dallas. How do you see this one playing out? Two very, very high-powered offenses and offensive talent.
Yeah, I remember talking about Dallas last year, and, of course, this is a repeat of the Western Conference final. And I don't think any less of them now, probably even more now that they have Rantanen. And I like their goaltending. They got guys back from injury. They had some key injuries, but they got through them during the playoffs. And that just shows their depth right there. When you lose Robertson and Heiskanen, your best defenseman, and you still are able to, win your first series against Colorado and then do the same thing against Winnipeg, who is the number one team in the NHL, I still like the Dallas Stars, but I definitely think we're looking at a 7-game series, and it should be a great series.
How about in the east side, Florida against Carolina?
Well, Florida, they can play any way you want. If you want to run and gun, which the Carolina Hurricanes do not, they can do that. If you want to play tight checking and wait for mistakes, they can do that, and they're excellent at both of them. I find it very interesting here that teams like Tampa Bay, when they were winning cups, and Florida, they couldn't care less about the President's Trophy or being in first place. They basically play an 82-game preseason. Just make sure you're in. Because if you examine the playoffs, it really doesn't matter if you're home or away. A lot of visiting teams win. So here we are in the top four. You got number 5 in Dallas, number 9 in Edmonton, number 10 in Carolina, and number 11 in Florida. Florida doesn't care they're 11th in the league, because they know what it takes to get through the playoffs, and it's a marathon. They know what they have to do to get through to the playoffs. And they had two tough series. They had to play Tampa Bay. It didn't turn out to be tough. It should have been. They win it in 5, and then Toronto takes them to 7. They just know how to do it. Even if you look at the NBA, with the exception of Oklahoma City, who was number 1, then you got number 5, Knicks, number 6, Indiana, number 10, Minnesota. It just seems like the top teams are not getting through in the playoffs anymore, because I think some of the better teams just realize we don't have to kill ourselves in the regular season. It's a marathon. Let's kill ourselves when we get into the playoffs.
All right, Paul. Well, enjoy it. Let me ask you this. Is there a team that you would favor out of the four right now to win the Stanley Cup? Is it Florida because of the experience of winning it last year, or do you like another team above the rest?
Of course, I'm not going to be surprised if Florida wins it, but I think I'd go with Dallas.
Okay, I like it. Dallas is an interesting team. I mean, they can really – it's fun watching their games. I don't particularly enjoy the team, but they're fun to watch for sure, and this should be a fun one with them. But they have the
right shade of green.
Yeah. There you go.
I like that shade of green. So, you know, they're fun to watch that way.
Paul, enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll talk soon. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, that is Paul Hamilton here on WGR. When we come back, so there's a couple of NFL proposals on the table for the owners, and one is the banning of the tush push again. I will talk about that. But the other one, this playoff seeding thing, I think that there's not a lot of talk of a certain angle about this that I want to bring up, right? This playoffs reseeding, doing it different in the NFL. It's got some interesting debates on both sides. I'm kind of torn because there's some I like about it, some I don't like about it. But I think I'm leaning one way whether they should do it or not because of something I think that not a lot of people are talking enough about if they wind up doing it here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in 1 day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
All right, so the Detroit Lions proposed this new playoff format, seeding format, back at the owners' meetings in March down in Florida. It did not pass, but it was tabled, which generally means, and here's the report was, even though the Lions put it out there, the league wants it. The NFL wants it. And generally when it gets tabled and the NFL wants something, what can happen is the NFL starts to make phone calls, say, here's why you should do it, here's why you should do it, and they kind of, you know, I guess twist some arms and, you know, sweeten the pot for whatever. However they do it, I don't know. But, they, you know, it's a it's all politics, right, how they do it. So what they want to do is say, all right, you still make the playoffs if you win the division and have the 3 best wildcard teams with record. Everybody, there will be no difference on who makes the playoffs. The only difference would be instead of saying the division winners automatically get the top 4 seeds, then the wild cards slot in. You would change it and say, no. We're just going to base it all on record. And I think that there's a bit of a pushback from a lot of traditional fans, no doubt, who say, why? You win your division, you should be rewarded. My response to that is, you are getting rewarded if you win your division. You're still getting into the playoffs. You're getting double rewarded if you get an automatic home game. Like, winning the division would still matter a lot. I'm torn because I do think winning a division and getting a home game makes sense. But the reason why I think that maybe this new proposal makes even more sense to me, late games, late in-season games. There's been some studies. If you go back to the NFL schedule the last few years, you look at Week 18. We all know Week 18, it's games between division opponents, right? Well, there are plenty of games in Week 18 that just don't matter and mean anything. And we saw one last year between the Bills and Patriots, although it mattered for the first pick. We knew that. Independent of the Bills here, I'm talking. I do think there's something to be said for let's make Week 18 meaningful again, if you want to say it that way. Because there's too many games that aren't meaningful. And I know why they created the division opponents against each other Week 18 to get more excitement, to try and get a chance that they're playing for a division title against each other, which we saw last year between the Vikings and the Lions. But now those Week 18 games aren't just for, you might already have your division wrapped up, but man, you're playing for seeding because there's like five other teams that are in that spot with you. I think I would like to see this passed, I think, for this. Last year's NFC, Lions, Eagles, Bucks, Rams, Vikings, Commanders, Packers. If you had this seeding, Lions, Eagles, Vikings would have gone from 5-3. Commanders would have gone from 6-4. They would have had home games when they didn't, because they had better records. And then Packers, Bucks, and Rams would have been on the road. Whereas, yeah, so a lot of this would flip. So that's why I wouldn't be mad. I wouldn't mind it if they did this. I have some thoughts on the tush push as well. Something I've always said about this type of play and rule, which I'm going to stick to my guns when it comes to this. We'll have that debate and talk when we come back on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Brayton Wilson's going to join me on NHL prospects and the stadium tour he took a couple weeks ago.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.